crucible, if you like, is rave. That's where jungle comes from. Rave is where you had hip-hop breaks speeded up. It's where you had house tracks speeded up. It had this very kind of ecstatic feel to it. There was a certain point between 91, 92, where you'd go to sound systems that used to play rag, and you'd hear them playing early hardcore. And that's kind of where jungle comes out of. Hip-hop isolated the breakbeat, without which jungle wouldn't have happened. The breakbeat's a point where the actual structure of the song drops away and you're simply left with the percussive apparatus of the drums and the bass. That fragment, which could be maybe 10 seconds within a track. From hip-hop isolating the breakbeat, you then had hip-hop looping the breakbeat, in other words, hip-hop sampling it as part of technology. So now the breakbeat becomes a piece of information that can be repeated and changed. What jungle brought to that was the programming of that sampling. Jungle brought new kinds of techniques for how to program that loop. In other words, jungle submitted the breakbeat to digital manipulation.
Enough respect to two of the originators. From out of North London and into the charts came PJ and Smiley of Shut Up and Dance. Come in and tell the people your roots, sound boys.
First of all, we had a sound system, playing in blueses and warehouse, the same thing as Soul to Soul. And in the sound system, me and PJ were both rappers. And from then on, we went on to progress to making our own music, which was rap music. But the rap music we was making, it was like speeded up breakbeats. And like the whole rap scene didn't understand it, but the house scene took to it. This is before anyone was doing breakbeats in house music. All our rap stuff was breakbeats, but fast, just as fast as any 808 state stuff when we were out then, you know, and no one understood it. But the house people took to it, and then next thing you know, everyone's doing with it.
We were rappers, but we were also dancers as well. So when we was making music, we naturally made music that we could dance to as well. But the whole rap scene at the time was very slow and hardcore. But we just wanted something we could dance to.
So we went faster and faster with the beats because we wanted to dance to it.
It's introduction, here's the four lines. This beat is beat, you sound so tough, that's a bird.
You heard it.
In a private song, turn the phone.
Yeah.
Due to the music, no hesitation. Turn you over like a radio station. Read the mic to put you off for patron. You didn't know, rap occupation. Throw you down like your mom from the barn. No, we jump with stone with feature. Or a movie and an eye feature. As a man,
bad.
Rap creature, now the conclusion, here's the four. To innovate is in a dance floor star. On stage is the place to prove it. A-L-J-L-J, new to the music. Now you'll be sweating, now you'll be getting so upset, cause I ain't letting you sit down.
No,
not for a second, but can you handle it?
I reckon
some need practice, but they lack it. On the turntable, I'm a smacking record.
Why?
Cause it'll wake you up, yo. It's like shoving a pin in your butt. It sounds reckless, so get this through your skull. I bet this record does the business. When you hear it, you will say, yo, what is this? When it stands for justice, and you can bust this or crush this. Some ain't on my level, to them I say settle, now pedal.
I'm not saying.
stable. I need help, but I get it from the turntable. I'm not sick, but here's a little bit of a funky dead font. Where suckers can't stay, mix me down. Light reggae, talent from Hackney is a display. 86 was a heat wave crew. Suckers on the weave of fast soon. With us a bit in the studio, or the crew made records. Now we're gonna show how we talk our life to start from. Hear about smaller D and I'll blue the best calm. Back in your day, yo, we used to do this. Where would the crossfade? Come on to the music.
DJ and Smiley influenced enough people. People like original lady selector DJ Rap.
I got into the scene by raving in 1986, going to parties generally, hearing Shut Up and Dance. Well, actually, what it was that inspired me to DJ was after just raving at the parties, I heard £10 to get in, which was by Shut Up and Dance. It was like the first breakbeat thing I'd ever actually heard, really, that was proper hip-hop style. I just thought, this looks like the sort of stuff I want to do, and that's how I got into it. I actually made a record before DJing and decided to go on a couple of pirate radio stations to promote the record. Fell in love with the DJing and it sort of started from there, escalated.
Jungle was not being produced just in London. The sound of drum and bass was spreading like a virus, spreading to people like original Northern Rude Boy, a guy called Gerald.
House music became pop music, so like, I just got out of that as soon as I felt it becoming really common, popular and everything else. At the time, I was doing some blues parties, like a Shebeen-style parties with Nicky Lockett, MC Tunes. And we was just going around like Moss Side and places like Hume, rigging up speakers and decks and like just playing. It was mostly Shut Up and Dance kind of style. It wasn't drum and bass even. It was more rave than drum and bass. And then the technology changed and all, but I got like a studio and that together. I started going into using the breaks, listening to what Four Hero were doing and Goldie and that, and just keeping like the same kind of formula together. They were listening to the things that I was doing at the time. I mean, I was listening to what they were doing. So it was like a weird play off each other kind of thing. one date, well, Goldie phoned me up, told me to go down to Rage. So, like, I went down there and checked it out, and then the rest is history, man. I just kept on going and, like, going to the Paradise Club, going to, like, the Sunday Roses and listening, hearing what was going on, going on, doing, like, the same kind of vibe. Oh, it was crazy, you know, it was, like, a really crazy up and down kind of thing, you know what I mean? Because, like, it was nearly every weekend I'd made it a thing to come down and find out what was going on, what was happening here and everything. I was actually coming down, doing a bit of work or chilling out, and then, like, going back up to Manchester. I'd be on a different vibe, in a different environment. There was a lot of shit happening up in Manchester and all. I got jacked up by, like, these geezers with a shooter and that, and then, like, I was really paranoid for months, you know what I mean? And, like, the music I wrote within that period was really, like, hard. Parts of the Glock track, like, some of the rhythms in it that I wrote at that time, it was really intense, you know what I mean? So I think that came across in the music.
To the east side, to Ipswich, home of Tom Ison and Red Eye Records. Tell the people about back in the days, Tom.
There were a couple of records that started to come out at the end of 1991. I started to use breakbeats more as, like, the most important thing in the tune, and started to develop it from then. And it just became a craze amongst producers, especially in England, where it really took off. People just sort of dropping the old four beat straight away and doing everything with breaks. You know, ever since then, it just carried on. I mean, it was literally a matter of months. One month, you'd hear pure 4-4 sort of ravey techno style, a lot of European-influenced stuff in the early 1991 days. And then come, say, October, November 1991, you know, the anthem tune of the night would be Zero B or We Are E or House Crew, all things using breakbeats. And obviously, people going out then or making music then thought, well, this has got to be the way forward. And it's just sort of gone from there, really.
massive respect goes out to the people in a town like Bristol, home of Rob Smith, who is now part of More Rockers, but was half of original two-steppers Smith and Mighty, who dropped a wicked record called Steppers Delight.
I suppose with the Steppers Delight thing, it was definite attempt to try and just include a bit more reggae into house, for want of a better term. At the time, it was kind of more house stuff, and I think it was just like trying to make some kind of dub house thing with breakbeats, really. I don't think it was jungle then. I don't think the term jungle was kind of as widely used as it is now. It was just another kind of strain of the house stuff that was going on. But then we went to a few dances and we could hear it, played it 45 and stuff like that with plus 8 on the decks, and it just sounded even better.
Smith and Mighty and all the Bristol drum and bass crew, also home to original junglist Ronnie Size and DJ Cross, now signed to a label like Talking Loud. Show the people about the vibes of the early days, Ronnie.
Back in the rave days, like early universes, when DJs like Bookham and Fabio and the Rider, when they used to play at Universe, for me, the occasion when Bookham dropped his tune Music, I believe I can remember myself running through fields, man, to listen to that tune, jumping just to catch the end of that tune, and that's what I was looking for. Not saying before that it was really hardcore, but we were still in it, you know what I mean? Because there was something there attracting us, and we was in it hard.
There was enough underground music around. The major record companies, well, they just didn't want to know. Kojo Eshin, break it down for the people.
Typically, most record companies went for General Levy, who had like a kind of medium to successful career. It was like a kind of ragga DJ, not bad, not good. And for some reason, General Levy like had a track out. They would just happen to be in the right place at the right time. The media typically wanted a face to talk about jungle, and they just gave General Levy this remit to go on and on and on. So that was kind of a debacle from the point of view of the dance press, and that turned off a lot of producers.
I'm gonna go on live in a minute, cheers. Incredible.
But a few months later, the record company's kind of managed to get a better end of the stick, and everybody knows that London signed Goldie. Goldie's generally held one of the kind of crucial innovators. He's kind of changed the face of the music three times over, first with Terminator, then with Angel. And then his new track, his 28-minute track, Timeless. Goldie was the first guy to do pitch bending. The effect is kind of dramatic on the way the beats sound. They just sound like they're heat-seeking missiles or something. They just sound like they're coming straight at you. It's phenomenal stuff. So London got him, then London also got DJ Crystal. And then there's been signings all over the place.
Producers, you know, a man like Goldie, a true pioneer.
The art of it for us internally with different artists and what we do is being able to take somebody's loop, turn it around and give it back to them. Almost like the fly too, you know. He goes in one thing, he just comes out f***ed up in another way, do you know what I mean? And the thing about that is that now technology is allowing me to take things apart in a way that before breakbeat was this cup drops on the floor, smashed into four pieces. Now this cup drops on the floor into 1,000 fragments. And having that kind of access to be able to do stuff with technology, it's almost like we are now writing breakbeat.
Although it sounds large, drum and bass is often made in a small place. Bedroom music of the first degree, computerized rhythms, you know? Time to head back out east to Ipswich and a man like Digital, original East Side junglist, to tell about how to compose drum and bass.
So yeah, my name's Digital from Ipswich. I'm not the one in London, but I make drum and bass music. Well, this is the W30 sampler. Right, I have to load this up, load my samples and everything onto here, yeah, and put them in line with everything on the Cubase program. So I've got a channel for each different sample, you know. I've got a channel for bass, channel for vocal, channel for whatever, you know. I've got like cymbals on there, whatever. Yeah, it's just a mixer, 16 track mixer. To put this on, just got the reverse cymbal thing on there and a couple of strings on the sound module, which I'm using for this track. And the effects unit, put some of that on the strings and the vocal, just to make them drift a bit. This is the Atari computer. You know, it just gets all my instruments up on the screen, you know, so I can edit everything, you know, to how I want it. The most popular break, everyone will know, is the Amen break. You know, you spit it out how you want, you know, you can edit it how you want, and this is how I've edited it for this, you know, for this particular tune. It's called the Amen Break because, the Amen Brothers done it, you know. They made it up themselves. Some hip-hop people, I think, they are. I split it up, like, in a few different ways, you know. So, depending on what sort of tune I'm doing, depending on what Amen I use, you know. I've got, like, different sounding ones and I've cut them up different, depending on what tune it is, depending on what Amen I use, you know. Another key sound in jungle is the bass line. It's definitely got to have a good bass line. Can't have jungle music without bass line, yeah. So I'll play some of that. Sort of like a deep 808 bass kind of thing. This is one I've sort of like edited myself as well. You can either have like more distorted bass lines. Well, there's all sort of different bass lines, isn't there? There's the reverse bass line, what you usually find on the more ragga jungle stuff, you know, that's often found on there. Things like dread bass, you know, that sort of bass line.
But it's not just the producers, you know. Jungle comes into its own in the dance, where the DJ is spinning his tunes. Goldie knows what time it is.
It's the DJs who contributed to things being in the mix so they can work. Because while those things are in the mix, people like myself, Doc Scott, Nookie, all of those people, we listen to that. We don't listen to the track, we don't listen to that, we listen to this, because this is what makes our next track. Because it's in the mix and something happens. And then when it happened, that's the sound, that's something else. And you catch it and you think, what? And you go home and you think, he put an 808 on the back of my 808 and it made another sound. I wanted to make that like that. You know, it's like an arena. That is like the Lion's Den. It happens there and then, and it'll never happen like that ever again. You'll never hear it in the mix line again. And that's the beauty of going to rage, the beauty of hearing groove, the beauty of hearing in Randall. And when I listen to those people, and like Peche, Doc Scott, when I hear them people, you've got to listen to what's things were in the mix. People understand that culture will never go away. So many things have been responsible for me making tunes because I heard it in the mix at the right point.
Big up, not big up.
DJ can wake up, go into the studio, make a tune, right, put it onto that, go, cut it, and that same night, go and play it and get a response from 2,000 people. That's how important a DJ is.
So the DJs and the mixing are very important. More Rockers even tested their album The Dance before releasing it. Come in, Rob Smith.
That is a collection of dub plates. It was only when we just decided to get some tunes cut to play out, really, to see how they were dropping, see how they were kind of going down with people. And when we were kind of practicing, it was kind of like bag of dub plates and got the decks out and tried it out. And it was just like really interesting for me that the third element that was coming out of mixing, say, one of my tunes with one of Peter's tunes, like the end of my tune as Peter's tunes coming in or something, and like this third element that came out was it was totally unknown. I didn't know what it was, and Peter didn't either. So that was the kind of idea behind the album, really. The bits in between where the tracks cross, these other bass lines that come through, and these other kind of drum patterns that come through, which are totally, and I've never heard them before, because it wasn't until you actually did that they existed.
dance into the record shop. The music moves itself. Come in, Tom Eisen.
Hello, I'm Tom from Red Eye Records. I'm standing outside my shop in Ipswich and started about 3 years ago. We do mainly drum and bass and jungle, a bit of happy stuff, and it's all going very well. I've got a label, Deep Red Records. If you'd like to come in, I'll show you around. Got that Johnny Jungle already, haven't you?
Johnny?
A spread and bass one.
Yeah. Got that one.
Alex Race remix. Is that your new one up there?
What?
Got your new one up there?
Mine, yeah.
Yeah.
Just play that one.
You're doing Hollywood tonight?
It's the 1st of June,
doing it. Yeah? It was started mainly as a dance music specialist, but we splintered off just into the drum and bass and the jungle aspect of it about a year and a half ago, and it's doing better than it ever has done just on that now. I think the shop does really well in a way because that's all there is in the town. There's no club to go to listen to what we sell in the shop. There's no pirate radio station. There really isn't anything apart from coming in the shop, buying tapes, buying records and mixing them at home yourself. So that's perhaps a key to why we are so busy.
There's about four different ones. One of them's a non-vocal thing as well.
Being a dance specialist and myself a jungle specialist, it is a different record shop scenario than any other. You have to sell everything to every customer. People come in and they listen to you, what you've got in that week. And because they probably haven't heard of the artist before, or they, you know, artists are doing things on different names, on different labels, it's all new to the people coming in. All right, they might have heard some of the bigger ones, but they'll still wouldn't recognise it on the wall if they saw it or in the racks. So people come up to the counter with maybe a few sleeves, or they'll just point at what's on the wall, and we'll sort of play them a selection and try and take the money off them, really.
I'll say.
You want that, yeah?
Yeah.
$5.99 now.
And we can't forget the radio station, running things every weekend in every big town. Big respect to the man like DJ Trace from Cool FM.
Basically, without pirate radio, I mean, that's been the basis of everyone in this whole city being so educated to the music. Because the radio stations have been pretty cutting edge, people go out and they respond well to a lot of the tracks that they wouldn't know unless they were DJs buying the music from record stores. So the only way they hear the music first, the fresh music, is from the radio. So I think that's helped a lot. It's like tuning into a sort of live set at a rave, really, when you hear like the major DJs on the station, you know? So I think that's very important because you're very close to your favourite DJ. It's like in your house, you know what I mean? It's live on air and there's a good communication between the public and the studio at Cool, as in giving out shouts and that kind of thing, do you know what I mean? So it all runs very smoothly. There's a good communication between the station and the public.
Running Jack Rude Boy! Running Jack Rude Boy! Running Jack Rude Boy!
Once again, bigging up Charlie, also Vicky, over on the south side of town. Happy birthday and all them tin there. Watch out for this on Philip Blunt Records. Just a prototype, so no information as yet, yeah? Neat preview business.
Pirates give the people what they want, 24-hour drum and bass. Come inside a lady like DJ Storm.
It's an outlet for music that just wouldn't be heard, really, on a level that everybody can access. I mean, I think pirate radio stations, if they hadn't been there, I don't think the scene would be anywhere near as big as it is, because obviously they give you information about raves and they're playing tunes that would just never be heard on, you know, your normal radio station, you know. So I think they've been of the utmost importance, really, for keeping the scene alive. And I think for a DJ, it's a chance to, if you're not playing out, it's a chance to make that your playing out kind of time, so that you can impress an audience, keep an audience with you for a couple of hours by the way you're mixing with your style, whatever, and people can phone in and they can have their shouts and they can put shouts out to other people, which normally happens, other, you know, crews in the area, whatever you want to call them. And yeah, it is a great way of uniting everybody, and it makes the people who phone in can talk directly to you as the DJ. So it's kind of a personal thing. So again, they feel part of what's happening, you know. Thing really, you know, it's a religion really.
And now jungle has become big business, seeing? Every major record label needs their jungle act. Ronnie Size and DJ Krust are signed to Talking Loud, but they still keep things real with their own label, Full Cycle.
The major offers obvious advantages, you know what I mean? Big cash things and exploitation around the world and tours and all the obvious things. And for us, that's obviously a bonus, you know what I mean? Because our label, because of the distribution setup and the way we're working at the moment, can only deal with, England and, you know, dotted places around the world, where obviously Talking Loud have got offices everywhere, and do you know what I mean, the major just does the bit, that type of thing. So, you know, we want to keep our label independent, and that's our label, do you know what I mean? So we can make our own decisions, our own choices, and just do what we want to do.
Some labels have knowledge of the junglist scene and the people within. David Stone, owner of Sour Records, who've got people like Shy FX, Apache Indian and T-Power on his books.
You can do a single with a major that may be a credible underground track, but the majors basically have one aim, and that's to put it in the charts. If they don't put it in the charts, then it might be credible for them to have a 65 or a 70, but you can be sure they'll have spent £40,000-£50,000 on promoting that single, which means you as an artist aren't very lucrative to them anymore. So it's very short term on that basis. However, some majors take a very good attitude towards this scene, as in, you know, London with the Goldie deal. They're taking him seriously as an artist. You know, RCA are doing some good things with MC Moose and also with Thunder and Joy. So it looks as if majors are now looking at the scene and starting to try to understand it rather than just trying to take it and take parts of it and exploit it, which is necessary because we are still, you know, a very young scene compared to anything else. And because of the feverish kind of attention we've had from the media, it has caused a kind of like once bitten, twice shy reaction. And slowly throughout the course of this year, this is changing, and we're all realizing that, yeah, you know, there is a certain amount we can do to help each other, and there are certain things we can't do. And as long as we recognize those, then I think, you know, it's healthy for us to be talking to each other. Jungle scene. Are we going to see Goldie or maybe even Ronnie Size on Top of the Pops? Step forward, Duncan, jungle reviewer for Echoes magazine.
It is a popular form of music. It is pop. The popularity of it is quite enormous. I wouldn't like to speculate how many people are going out and listening to it every weekend and enjoying it every weekend. But with obviously the various big raves, the various big events where you've got in excess of 10,000 people all, you know, homing together in this one venue just to get their ears blasted out by these huge bass lines. How far it will go is a different matter. I mean, there's a big movement towards artist albums, and a lot of people have said to me that it won't work. But I remember people used to say it wouldn't work with techno, work with house, and especially hip-hop. Now, with its, you know, million-pound major label deals, you know, all the opportunities are there. It's artist development is the key to its future expansion. And it's to bring it away from a faceless form of underground dance music into, you know, just, you know, let everyone know the people that are making the music, you know the people behind the computer.
You know, it's pointed out to me by DJ Ron that we have changed the youth culture of this country. Whether we like it or not, you know, we're responsible for that beast out there at the minute. You know, we're responsible for that situation. Jungle belongs to the people. Breakbeat belongs to the people as that culture. Because we're going to look back on this culture and we're going to know what's responsible for doing certain things. Time will tell.
Yes, yes, as we say, enough respect to the jungle is massive, enough respect to the producer Matt Hall, myself the navigator, the charismatic one, out of here, but not before I make sure that you check same time, same place next week and for the next 7 weeks as Radio 1 rolls out the drum and bass with the first regular national jungle showcase called One in the Jungle, starring all the biggest names on the scene, including DJ Rap, a guy called Gerald, Brocky and the MC Deck. Kicking off next week with a man like Goldie, shocking out the nation with pure junglist business. So make sure you're tuning in and don't be late. Sin, Navigator out of here. Peace.
It's an M2 now. I love Soulja, I play them tune now for real.